and welcome to another jam-packed episode of My Favorite Conservative. I am Edward.
And I am Andrea, but I am not conservative.
Seriously? Really?
Seriously.
You're going to keep up that facade?
I am not. I'm not, but you are my favorite conservative.
Thank you.
Hence the name of the show. Yes.
Now I get it.
All right. We are back. Sorry we've been off the last 2 weeks. We have not done a live show, but we actually have to earn a living, and I travel from time to time.
Yes, but we do hope you enjoyed our last two episodes, and if you missed them, please revisit them on our website. And we had one of the episodes, we had Jennifer Oliver O'Connell. She is a Black female conservative writer at redstate.com.
Yes.
And we also had Catherine McKinney, who has done amazing work documenting the January 6th prisoners.
Yes. So those are available. Go to myfavoriteconservative.show and you can listen to them wherever you get your podcast. So let's get to the polls because things have changed since we were live last.
Getting a little exciting, I would say.
Yes. So, and the RCP national average Trump versus Harris, 3 weeks ago when we were last live, Harris was up 2.0. Now Trump is up 0.3. Wow. So, well within the margin of error, but not going the right direction for the Harris campaign.
Not at all. And I think we're seeing a trend here. Let's keep going. Okay. But this day in history, we always look back in 2020 and 2016. Right. And at this point in 2020, Joe Biden was up 7.4 and Hillary Clinton was up 5.6.
And that was after the October surprise.
Yeah. And just to revisit, Trump is up 0.3. So
yes. So
good trend for the Trump campaign.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to the battleground states. Again, this is the RCP average for all of these. I'm going to take the East Coast.
Do it.
All right. So again, 3 weeks ago, Harris was up 0.4. Now Trump is up 0.6 in Pennsylvania.
Oof.
Key state. Yeah. In North Carolina, this is kind of interesting. I don't know what this means, but Trump was up 1.4 3 weeks ago. Now he's still up, but only 0.8.
So she was hitting North Carolina hard.
Was she?
Recently? Yeah.
Okay. Georgia, 3 weeks ago, Trump was at 1.5. Now he's up 2.2. That does not surprise me. I mean, I think he's going to get Georgia.
Yeah, I think it's trending that way too.
All right. Take us to the Midwest.
The upper Midwest, last 3 weeks ago in Michigan, Kamala Harris was up 1.7. Pretty hefty little lead for her there.
Yeah.
It is now Trump 0.2.
So tight. Oh, my God.
Indeed. Wisconsin. Last time Harris was up 1.0. Now Donald Trump is up 0.2. Not huge margins in there,
no.
but certainly in Trump's, the trend is favoring Donald Trump.
Yes.
Yeah. You want to take us out west?
Let's go out west. So 3 weeks ago, Harris was up 1.2 in Nevada, and now Trump is up 0.7.
Ooh.
So again, well within the margin of error, but going the wrong direction for the Harris campaign. In Arizona, 3 weeks ago, Trump was up 2, and he's dropped a little. He's now up 1.5. So has the Harris campaign been going to Arizona?
Yeah, they did. They did a few events there this past week.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then on my favorite, as you guys know, predictit.org, where people actually bet on the races. 3 weeks ago, Harris was 56 and Trump was 48.
Oof.
Okay. Yeah. So 8-point difference in Harris's favor.
Yes.
Today, Harris is at 42 and Trump is at 62. 20-cent difference. Again, this is not a percentage or points. These are actual dollars and cents that people bet on the race. That's huge.
Yeah, it's a 28-cent complete reversal from the last time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, every day it just seems to be growing and growing. First it was, you know, like 6 and then 7, and then all of a sudden it jumped up to 10 and 12. Now we're at 20. So.
Yes. And I actually tried to go back to this day in history for Predicted, and I couldn't grab the numbers from 2020, but I did grab the numbers from 2016. So this time, 2016, they didn't do it by candidate. They did it by party, but the Democratic Party had an 82% chance of winning this time in 2016. And we know how that turned out.
So Trump at 62 cents sounds pretty good.
Yes.
For him, yes.
Yes.
There might be some other people watching.
We see people watching live. Thank you so much for joining us. Like I said, I know we've been gone for a few weeks. Yep. And if you're able to comment, we would love to share your comments in real time. Don't be afraid. All right, handsome devil.
Oh, thank you.
He wrote that in the script. I'm just saying. I mean, it's true, but you know, he wrote it in the script. So tell everyone what we're talking about today with only 9 days.
Oof, yes.
Damn,
we're
until
in
the election.
Single digits now.
It's crazy.
To the election day.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it is.
So crazy.
Well, now I don't want to tell people who to vote for, Trump.
No, don't tell people.
I think it's important for our viewers and listeners to give them the hard facts, let them make their own decision on why they want to vote for Donald Trump.
Okay. So, you know, what's unique about this election is voters don't have to judge candidates' rhetoric. Trump and Harris made up the last two administrations, even though she was VP. She's still part of Biden-Harris. So voters can simply look at their records to see whose was better and what most aligns with you personally.
Yeah. Now, we got these numbers from the Job Creators Network. They are America's leading pro-small business organization. And what they did is they took data comparing more than a dozen key quality of life metrics. We thought that would be important because you're voting on your quality of life. You're voting on how you want to live your life. And we've got a lot of numbers, but we're going to take it slow.
Yeah.
We'll break them down individually. Why don't we get started? Let's start with inflation.
Okay. Inflation. And this was across their whole candidacy, right?
Correct. Their whole term.
Thank
so
you.
Far. Yes.
All right. So average inflation with across Trump's 4 years, 7.3%.
No, that's total inflation.
Oh, total.
Total inflation.
Oh, well, right. You didn't write total in the script.
That's
sorry.
Total inflation.
All right. All right.
So over 4 years of Donald Trump, it was 7.3%.
All right. Under Biden-Harris, get ready for it, people. 20.5%.
That's worser, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, that's bad. That's,
yeah,
and,
that's
and we, I mean, we see that going to the grocery store, you and I. I mean,
everybody
do.
Sees
everybody
it. Yeah,
sees
go to the
it.
Gas station, wherever.
Yes.
Yeah, it's basically three times worse than the Trump administration.
So if that's important to you, just keep that in mind. All right, let's tell us the next category.
Let's go to average wage growth.
Okay. All right, explain what that means.
Well, that's just what your wages grew on an average base, or overall for the administrations and
okay.
what we have data so far.
So Trump, 15%.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
Biden-Harris, 18.1%.
Wow, that's really good.
Okay.
You would think they would campaign on that.
You would
right?
think so, but there's this little thing called the real average wage growth. And would you explain to our viewers what that means?
Yeah, so
it's a calculation.
It's taking your wage growth, but it's then factoring in inflation on how much your wages actually grew with inflation factored in.
Right. So we gave you the inflation, we gave you the average wage
right.
growth.
So Trump was at 15%, right? The real wage growth.
The what, average, yes.
Right. What is it with inflation factored into it?
7.7%.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially, they're subtracting inflation from the average wage growth, essentially, roughly.
Right,
yeah.
Correct.
All right. So, so under Trump, it was 7.7%, the real average wage growth.
Right. So that's what your money really, your wages actually grew, putting everything into it.
Right.
Very simple.
Under Biden-Harris?
Yeah. Now, he was bragging. You know, I would say he should brag about the 18.1 average wage growth. But if you factor inflation into it, what is it?
You mean she.
She.
Yeah.
Biden-Harris,
under yes. Biden-Harris, the real average wage growth, again, this is a calculation of the average wage growth minus inflation, negative 2.4%.
Yeah. So you're basically losing wage growth. You have negative wage growth because of inflation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they can brag about that their actual real wage growth is higher than Donald Trump's.
Yes.
But it's really not.
Right.
Get down to it. Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to the
then
next
we
category.
Go with real median income growth in a percentage. So this is, and what they did, and I like this because
I do too.
They took out COVID.
For both parties.
For both parties, both right. Parties. They took out the first year of Biden. They took out the last year of Trump.
Yep.
Because that gives you a little bit better measure of their actual policies. Right.
Because COVID impacted.
It was everything. A hopefully once in a lifetime situation. Right. So we got Trump's, you know, first 3 years, Biden's last 3 years, pretty much.
And well, Biden first Harris. 3 years. No, yeah. 2020. Yeah. Okay. So under Trump, it was 10.5%, so the real median income growth. And under Biden-Harris, 1.3%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you take out the crap that happened that wasn't the American government's fault.
Right.
Right. The administration for either side, it wasn't their fault.
Right.
And you see stark differences, 10.5 for Trump growth.
Yeah.
1.3 for Biden-Harris.
And I just want to throw in a personal note here. For my company, we recently were hiring for a new position. And I think this kind of aligns with this, these numbers. It was shocking. And we really had a tight budget. Like we couldn't go over. Of course, it was nothing personal. It's a budget thing. And it was shocking how many people applied for the job who were willing to take a significant pay cut for a good job. Like, so I think that's just an example.
Well, good health benefits too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But people were willing to take a pay cut because it was like, it is what it is, right? It just is. All right. So now we go down to the next category. Yes. So explain the difference between these two.
So we've got real median income growth. So this is how much your income as a family actually grew.
And this is dollars,
percent. So yeah. Now we're doing the same thing in dollars. So what does that mean, you know, from the last category we had where Trump was up 10.5%, what is that in dollars?
Right. In dollars, that's $7,690 during the Trump administration.
So you're $7,600, almost $7,700 richer under yes. Trump. And yeah. What about Biden? How much richer were you?
$1,050.
Wow. So
it's crazy.
What are we talking?
Seven
six
times,
and a half times.
Six and a half, seven, yeah.
Times. Whew.
Yeah. And they dig even deeper. So talk about the next category.
Let's do it with Hispanic real medium income growth in terms of dollars.
Okay.
So
under Trump, it was $6,480.
Okay. The average income growth for Hispanic people
by
under Trump in dollars, that went up almost $6,500.
Yep.
What about Biden-Harris?
$700.
I'm sorry.
700. Only three digits.
Oh.
$700. Okay. All right. They dig down again in a very...
Hispanic people, there's probably nothing more you need to see, you know.
We're not telling people how to vote. Okay. We're just giving them information.
Okay. All right.
And if this matters to you, and we have a great segment coming up later of an example of somebody who's just tone deaf because none of this stuff matters to him, but we'll save that for later.
All right. So that we just did Hispanic. Let's do Black real medium income growth in terms of dollars. How much under Trump did the average Black income grow?
$4,670. And I also want to just throw in here that under Trump, Blacks had the lowest unemployment rate in history since they've been keeping track.
Yeah. Now they've also, they've matched that in the Biden administration too, but that's, you know, Trump set the number and I think they've actually tied it.
Okay. And under Biden-Harris?
Yes.
Black real median income growth in dollars, $2,650.
So $4,600 versus $2,600.
So about half.
Yeah,
not good. Okay. All right. So we're moving on from income and going into something that anyone with a car has to deal with.
Everyone. Average gas price.
Yes. Average gas price. And I want to say average because I spent a lot of time traveling and these were not the gas prices I saw under either administration. Yeah. Okay. But under Trump, the average gas price was $2.57. Under Biden-Harris, $3.58.
Well, that's only a dollar. That's probably what?
Like 33% more?
No, over 40.
Oh, yeah,
over
okay.
40%
He's
more.
Better at math.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, again, if you've got a vehicle that has 20-gallon tank, there's every time you fill up, it's $20 more than you shouldn't have to spend.
And I don't have a car. I mean, I used to, but I don't. And I've been thinking about getting a car, and he keeps saying, wait, just wait. Wait, honey, don't get one yet. All right.
For sure.
Bring us to a new category.
All right. Let's look at job growth.
Okay.
Because we hear these numbers all the time. All right. So what I like they're doing, though, is they're taking out the pandemic, right? So the true,
and the bounce back.
The drop and the bounce back.
Right.
You know, nobody should take credit for or be
punished.
Be punished for, yes, for an outside source such as COVID. So for the job growth, what was it under Trump?
6.5 million jobs. 6.5.
Okay. And again, taking out the bounce back with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
3.1 million.
So over double for Trump. 6.5
to 3.1.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Let's look at job growth in the manufacturing.
Okay. All right. So
same thing, taking out the pandemic on both sides.
All right. And the bounce back. They're taking out both. Okay. Under Trump, it was 414,000
manufacturing jobs.
Yes. Okay. And under Biden Harris, 137,000.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, hey, it's on the plus side. At least you can say that, right? Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Good God. Okay. All right. Moving on from jobs to something that I don't know if every American cares about this, but I would hope you do, because this is an issue with both parties, 100% an issue with both parties.
Yeah. These numbers have just become so big that, the average person just can't relate. Hardly anybody can, really.
I know.
So this is the average annual deficit.
Yeah. So, and again, I'm just going to stress, both parties spend way too much freaking money.
Right, the average. So every year, we're spending more than we're bringing in. So what was it under Trump?
It was 810 billion. That's billion with a B for boy.
That's a big number.
That's a big number. You're supposed to give me the intro.
And under Joe Biden?
Yeah, thank you. All right. Yeah. Under Biden Harris, 1.63 trillion. With a T. And that does not include either of these numbers does not include COVID. They took out those numbers. So I actually want to say those again. So under Trump from 2017 to 2019, again, before COVID, 810 billion in the average annual deficit. And under Biden Harris, again, they excluded COVID and all those checks that people got from 2022 to 2024, 1.63 trillion.
So basically double.
Yes. Yeah. And guys, we can't sustain this. We cannot as a country at all. We will become Greece. No offense, Greece. I want to go there one day, but we can't do this.
It used to be just a few short years ago, we would add $1 trillion to the deficit every year. It's now every 100 days, we're adding $1 trillion to the deficit.
We can't do this.
Yeah, you keep that up. You know, you're talking over $3 trillion a year on the deficit.
Yeah,
it is.
I feel like it started with Bush with the wars. That's where it started creeping up. And then Obama just went crazy.
Yeah. Nobody seems to be pulling back much.
No. Okay.
All right. We're going to look at something called the consumer sentiment average.
So explain what that means.
It's done by the University of Michigan. It started back, I believe, in like the mid-1960s. And what it does is it measures the consumers, the people out there that are buying things, because that's what contributes to our GDP,
right?
To our gross domestic product. So it's based off 100. If you're at 100 on this number, that's you're feeling pretty good about the economy.
Right.
You're willing to spend money. Things under 100, the lower you go, you're pulling back. You're like, I'm worried, I'm not going to spend money. So the consumer sentiment average under Donald Trump.
No, actually, I want you to give the all-time high first, because I think this is a good comparison.
Okay, so let's look at the all-time high was in January of 2000. This is Bill Clinton, end of Bill Clinton's administration.
Yeah,
it got to 112.
And why was that?
Well, for some of you younger people, you don't know, but there was a dot-com bubble. Right. This was the start of the internet, and any stock that had a .com attached to its name, like, went through the roof.
And you were a bond trader then. It's funny.
Yeah. So I was a bond trader, and it was really funny because I'm a bowler too. Okay. Actual bowling. Right. And we had a team on the company I work for, and I was a bowler there. And we started at this time back in 2000, like the other bowling teams were, you know, plumbers, electricians, landscapers, things like that. Right. They'd have their own teams. And they'd come over to us telling us what we should be buying in the stock market. And we'd look at each other and go, oh, it's over. It's over. If you're getting your advice from your plumber on your financial decisions, and sure enough, it completely crashed. So yeah. So January 2000, it was 112. That's the all-time high. So yeah. let's
just remember pets.com crashed. All right, yeah. All right. So under Trump, the consumer sentiment average was 93.2.
Yeah. That includes COVID. Okay. And let me say this, because most of the first 3 years of Trump was right at 100.
Okay.
And COVID just completely, everything fell off.
So it's still a good average.
Oh,
I mean, that's an A minus,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure.
If you're doing grades, sorry, former teacher here. All right. Under Biden Harris, the consumer sentiment average is 68.4. And actually today it's 70, but the average is 68.4. So that's a C, man.
Yeah, people are not real bullish right now because there's just so much instability. Nobody knows what inflation's going to do, blah, 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 with the election, everything else. So you don't want to be in the 70s. You want to be in the 90s, right close to 100.
Yeah.
That's the key.
I think at this point, anyone would take like even 85.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Solid B.
Woo. Yeah. And by the way, that is a lagging number.
Explain what that means.
And what that means is it's not something that it's people planning kind of to buy things in the future on what they think the economy is going to be like.
Right.
Right. So yeah, it's a lagging indicator.
Okay.
All right. Let's look at something kind of really interesting. It's regulatory costs added.
Okay.
So how much did Donald Trump, in terms of adding regulations to businesses, add cost-wise?
So Trump added $30 billion and Biden Harris 1.4 trillion.
To date, yes. They're still not done.
They're not done. And it was really interesting. We'll put a link to this in the show notes. Trump did an interview with Joe Rogan for the whole 3 hours of his show. And we listened to, I think you listened to all of it.
No, I listened to about half of it.
Yeah. So I listened to part of it as well. And one of the questions Rogan asked him was, what's more important to you, cutting taxes or cutting regulation? And Trump did not hesitate. He's like, we have to cut regulation.
Yeah.
We have to start there.
Yeah. Regulations are business killers. They add so much cost. And especially when you get into the EPA stuff and everything else.
Well, I just want to say, I mean, I'm a small business owner, and this new employee we did hire, because we're all entirely remote, we have to deal with things state by state, and we never know what's going to happen. And it's unbelievable the amount of time my operations manager, God bless her, has had to spend on the regulation.
Yeah. Now, if you remember, Trump, during his administration, I think he originally started out, he wanted to cut 10 regulations for every new regulations. I think it actually ended up being about 5.
Right. I think so,
but,
too.
Yeah. So $30 billion in regulatory costs that in the entire Trump administration, $1.4 trillion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it does.
I feel like this is one of those things where, you know, if you're an employee and you don't own a business, you may not realize behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But again, as a small business owner, it's unbelievable the amount of regulation and how much time it takes.
Well, it takes time. It takes people's time. But it also doesn't let you hire more people.
Nope.
Right. And it just puts an anchor on the economy.
And I will say, without calling out the state, oh God, I feel like, excuse me, sneeze.
Is it a 4-letter state?
Okay. I'm not going to call out the state.
Well, there's plenty of 4-letter states.
There are, but I'm not going to call out the state, but I'm just going to say that the regulation in this particular state is so bad that my operations manager was like, I never want to hire another employee from this place. Like, is there any way to just exclude altogether? Like, that's how bad it is. So anyway, let's switch gears away from regulation and go to something that I think everybody can relate to.
Yeah. Either if you're a homeowner or you want to be a homeowner, this is the average new home mortgage payment.
Okay. So I just want to say, simple. To my friends, I've got a handful of them right now who want to buy a house now. Wait, do not do it right now. These numbers, average new home mortgage payment under Trump, $1,700. Under Biden Harris, $2,750. And we know in states like California, where I used to live, that number's triple easily.
Oh,
easily.
Yeah. Yeah. So over $1,000 a month.
More.
Yes. For your average mortgage yes. payment. That, so that's insane.
If you're thinking about buying a house, please wait.
Yeah. Wait. See I mean, what if you, some people have to, they have to get in, you know, whatever move and this kind of stuff. And
you can rent.
But you're hoping that, you know, rates under hopefully a Donald Trump administration start to come down, and then you could refinance to a lower rate.
Yes, but that's a gamble.
Oh, of course it is.
That's a big gamble. All right, moving on.
We're going to look at oil production, which is barrels per day.
Okay.
Okay.
That's the measurement they use.
Correct. And what this number is, this is the barrels per day that was added from the previous administration's high point.
Okay.
Okay. So this number that we're going to see for Trump is off of Obama's highest point. So how many more barrels per day Donald Trump add on an average?
Okay. So we know Trump, I mean, he's very pro energy. Mm-hmm. So he added under his administration 3.3 million more barrels per day.
Oof.
And we were energy independent, folks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not my top issue, but it's probably my top five. We were energy independent.
Well, energy relates to everything, inflation, yes, you does. Name it. Yeah. So, okay. So now we're going to look at the Biden. So what was the amount of increase on the barrels per day over Donald Trump's high to Biden Harris?
314,000. So a tenth less.
A tenth of what?
Yeah, a tenth of what?
One tenth of 90% less.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah, sorry.
Right. So,
yes. Again,
so but the Biden administration, Harris is out there saying, we're pumping more oil than they did under Trump. Technically true.
Right.
But the amount of increase is basically like one tenth of what it should be.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to call them out on that.
Yep.
They should.
All right.
And our last number.
Which this is super important.
This is a biggie. This is a biggie.
Yes.
Illegal immigrant encounters on the southwest border.
Yes. And I just going to say there are a lot of people that feel like on both sides, these numbers are probably low. But under Trump, 2 million. Actually,
just over.
Yeah, just over 2 million. 2,034,000. Under Biden Harris, 8.4 million. 8.4 million,
that
folks.
That is probably the lowest estimate you'll ever hear.
Yeah.
It's at least 10. They're admitting to 10.
Yeah, they are admitting to 10. That's
so
right.
If you're admitting to 10, you're probably looking at like 15.
Yeah.
Plus you've got gotaways.
That's right. They're not included.
Right. So. Just remember what a gotaway is. Okay. You know, the Biden administration has thrown open the gates and is letting everybody come in.
Well, until recently.
Right. But these people that don't go to these gates are probably not the best people you ever, maybe Biden might even throw them out and Harris might even throw them out or not let them in. So they go around the gates because of who they are.
So your point
gang
is
gang members, these, drug runners,
these numbers do not include those people.
And they're the really bad people.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Really sad.
All so, right.
But you know, basically on every major issue that matters to Americans, the Trump administration doesn't just beat the Biden-Harris administration. It blows them out of the water. It really does.
If people care about these issues.
Well, there might be a couple that people don't care about, but most of them, I think people care about their gas prices, their wages, how much they're paying for, you know, more for inflation, illegal immigration, all of these things.
All right, I'm going to set you up for your rant here.
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's it. That's the intro and the rant. But no, my final thoughts on this, you know, we talked about don't tell you who to vote for, right? We just want to lay it out here. And I have fun with people. But when you go to the polling booth, ask yourself this. Why do Democrats lie about who they really are? I mean, they claim that every time an election comes around, they're moderate conservatives when they are demonstrably not. Right. You know, you can look at voting records, that sort of things. They do it every election cycle, every 2 years. All of a sudden, anybody that's on the left is somehow a centrist.
Well, they go left for the primary and then skew back to moderate.
Yeah, I mean, that's a famous Nixon line on that. But it is, and I'll get to that. But let's look at Kamala Harris. She's a liberal, progressive, whatever you want to call her. And just about everybody knows it, right? Unless you're not plugged in at all to politics, and you only believe what you see in the ads. But
I'm going to add to, she was the most liberal senator in the Senate, more liberal than Bernie Sanders, yeah, folks.
Her voting record was more liberal than Bernie Sanders.
I mean, so, yeah.
So that should tell you a little something. But, all right, continue. But why has she changed nearly every position she's had in the past? Yeah. I mean, well, she says my values haven't changed, right? I mean, what the hell does that mean?
Well, she never answers the question.
It doesn't mean anything.
She never answers. It doesn't matter who's asking. She
and what I find funny is, why are liberal senators in swing states running ads where they're cozying up to Donald Trump? I mean, you've got Casey in Pennsylvania. You've got Sherrod Brown in Ohio. All of these people are now running ads saying how they work so well across the aisle.
Yes, I work well with Trump.
And then you look back at their voting records, and they voted against everything that Trump proposed, right? And voted for everything that Biden and Harris have proposed. So come on, if you've got in swing states these liberal senators, you know, cozying up to
They're
Donald
worried.
Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess my question is, do you ever see a conservative candidate pretend that they're more liberal?
Rarely. I think there are some times you have in the past.
If it is, it's like a Mitt Romney.
I was going to say
really
Mitt Romney. Oh, my God.
A conservative. He just wants everybody to like him.
Yeah.
But if you're a liberal or progressive, whatever you want to call it, own it. Be proud of it. Run on it.
Yeah.
But we all know the reason why they lie about who they are. And that is, if they ran on their policies and their values, they'd never win another election.
Yeah.
They really wouldn't.
May I close it out?
You may.
All right. Thank you. Again, thank you so much for joining us live. We see you. Feel free to comment. I believe we can see the comments on a couple of channels. I'm not on everyone. Oh, we can see the comments. All right. Let me finish this out and then we're going to share the comments. All right. Think about this. Kamala Harris has raised $1 billion in just a few short months. It's a record, right? She has 90% positive coverage in the mainstream media, and she's losing. She's losing. The more they put her out there, first they were not letting her go out. They were going to do the underground, you know, in the basement campaign. But the more they put her out there, the worse she does. All right. So before we move on, so sorry that I didn't see these comments earlier. So let's start with Mark. Mark says, hi, Andrea. Hello. And then he says, Mark, he says, how are you? I'm good, Mark. Thank you so much for asking. All right. So now we've got some more on the groceries. And thank you. This was on LinkedIn and YouTube. So thank you so much. So I'm going to share this one.
Panda bro.
Before a like can it. Of beans was $1.50. Now a can of beans mortgage extension.
It's second mortgage to buy a can of beans. I like it, Mark.
Yeah, Panda. Sorry, you Panda. Know what? We feel the same way. We've mentioned this on a show before. Our average bill at Costco now is $100 more, and we're not buying anything different.
Oh, no.
It's terrible. And Panda, let's see. Panda Bro has another one for us. most people are simply woefully uninformed about the true statistics of the Democratic presidency. The propaganda machine just wants us to know Trump is bad. Oh, I think you're a dude. I'm not sure, but a freaking man. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I would like to take that a bit further. He's not bad. He's Hitler, Stalin, and Mussolini rolled into one.
That's right.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes, so you're on the right track there, Panda.
Panda, love you it. Are Thank absolutely you. Right. I mean, and especially in these last couple of major interviews that Kamala has done, that the town halls and the sit downs, 60 Minutes, whenever they ask her a real question, a legitimate question, she just goes to Trump's bad, Trump's evil.
Yeah. Or I was raised middle class, or,
yes.
Or listen, I was a prosecutor. I'm the only one that's prosecuted transnational criminal organizations. Really? That's what you're doing with $1 billion? Really?
I know. Well, thank you so much for the comments in real time. Sorry I didn't catch them a little bit sooner. All right, let's move on to something happy and exciting.
All right.
This Week in Wins. Tell
this Week in Wins. Yeah, this is a story you're not going to see a ton of coverage on.
I didn't know about
on,
it. Yeah. Until
but if
me.
This election goes to the Supreme Court, this is something that you will see. This is from our friend Sarah Arnold over at townhall.com. And the headline is, the GOP just secured a massive election integrity win. And from the article, the Republican National Convention, the RNC, won a massive election integrity victory, undermining unlawful ballot counting laws in Democrat states. On Friday, the RNC secured a win in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled that mail-in ballots that arrive after Election Day cannot be counted under federal law.
What?
Yeah, this comes as Democrats have claimed it will take days to count all the ballots due to late mail-in votes. The RNC chairman, Michael Whatley, who's doing a fantastic job, by the way, called it a significant win for preserving the integrity and fairness of the presidential election. So for me, this is super important because if this case, this is a Mississippi case, by the way. So if this goes to the U.S. Supreme Court and we have questions and need rulings, the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, they don't tend to overturn rulings by the circuit court. So this is setting a precedent that, you know, if you're for, I believe, election integrity, this is a big, big win.
Yeah. Bottom line, don't mail in your ballots late. Like, just don't. Yeah. Like, get them there. You already mailed yours in.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, here in Alabama, we do not have early voting.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I will not be able to get to the polls from my job. I'm going to be out of town most of the day. Can't get back. So I had to request a ballot. Had to go online, request a ballot.
It was a process.
They sent it to me. I had to make a copy of a photo ID.
Yep.
Send that back in with the ballot. Got the ballot. Filled it out, put it in a super secret envelope inside another envelope. Mail it back, minus, now granted, postage not included either. You say then you got to find your stamps and everything else. But yeah, it's not easy and it shouldn't be. It should not. It shouldn't be just like click a button and like, all right, I'm done. So
me, I'm walking down the street because our voting place is in the park.
It is. Yeah, yes. You can literally walk to it. So let's jump to this week. WTF, what the poopah.
All right. You're going to do this one because I want to do the next one.
Okay. All
right, but I'll do it's this week and what the fuck. Go ahead. Give us the explicit rating. Body I mouth. Don't care. Yeah.
All right. From our good friend Todd Benzman at the NewYorkPost.com. And again, this is another story I guarantee most of you have not seen. All right. Here's the headlines. Hundreds of thousands of migrants are being held in southern Mexico until U.S. Election Day. And are eager to rush the border.
This issue matters to me. Continue.
Yeah, this is from Tapachula, Mexico. It says, this town near the border of Guatemala holds a migrant time bomb ready to go off just after the U.S. presidential election. The fuse was lit in December 2023 when the Biden-Kamala administration sent senior lieutenants to Mexico to work out the details of what remains a highly mysterious grand diplomatic bargain. Worried about what the optics of the southern border would do to their re-election chances, though not the migrant crisis itself, the White House wanted to stop the pictures of crowds of people gathered at the wall, right? They didn't want them at the northern border, right? The deal was to have Mexico deploy over 32,000 troops to the U.S. border to round up untold thousands of intended border crossers from the northern precincts and ship them their air quotes, internal deportation by planes and buses, thousands of miles to Mexico's southern provinces and entrap them in cities down there behind roadblocks. So the effect was immediate.
Yes.
The illegal border, the crossings went from 12 to 14,000 a day in late 2023 to now 3 to 4,000 a day. So they got done what they wanted to get done. They wanted to get rid of the optics.
Right. And it did.
Yeah.
It did.
So instead of 12 to 14,000, you're getting 3 to 4,000. You're like, oh, gee, it's all solved. So we're seeing something that on November 5th, if we have a winner, I think you're going to see either way these people are coming, right? If Trump wins, there's going to be a mad dash to the border
because to get here before
he doesn't take office till January 20th.
Exactly.
There will be, and the gates will be wide open
because
Biden and Harris they wouldn't give a crap, right?
Nope.
They want to get as many people in. And if Biden and Harris win, good Lord, Katie bar the door because they're going to be coming from everywhere.
Yeah. So either way, there's going to be this influx in November, December.
Yeah. You know, and I wanted to mention something here. This is when you see the media tell something or conservatives especially say something and the media immediately says that's not happening, right? You're a conspiracy theorist or whatever.
The liberal, mostly liberal media.
Mostly liberal media.
Yes.
Remember this. There's always four steps to a controversial subject, whether it's immigration, whether it's critical race theory being taught in schools. Four stages. The first step is it's not happening, right? The media tells you that's not happening.
Not true. Yeah. No.
The next step, it's happening, but not much. You know, it's not that big. It's rare. The third step is it's happening, but it's good for you. It brings benefits. It's going to increase the economy. It's going to do whatever. The last step, shut up. You're a racist. Right. So it's not happening. Happening, not much. Happening, but it's good. Shut up. You're a racist. Every controversial topic you can actually apply that to.
All right. So hold on just a moment. This is from Anzu Mara. Hope I'm getting your name right. Misinformation, all caps. Someone cancel this man.
Thank you, George Orwell.
Do you mean Edward or do you mean Trump? Do you mean you?
I'm hoping.
I don't know. But we, either way, we appreciate your comment. We really do. Like I said, we show all the comments, whether you like us or not. So thank you so much, Anzu. And we do have links in all the show notes. The podcast goes out tomorrow, so you can read these articles for yourself tomorrow. I promise.
Right. But that's a problem that we're seeing now. Everything is labeled misinformation, disinformation.
Yeah.
You know what, people, do your own research. Don't believe me on anything. I don't care.
Yeah.
This is my opinions. These, you know, are facts that I've looked up.
But again, we put the links in the show notes.
Links, everything that we talked about have links in the show notes. Oh, it was sarcasm.
It was sarcasm.
All right. See, you can't tell that.
Oh, I love it.
Thank you, Anzu. I love a good sarcasm.
Me too. Like, that's my go-to. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't you finish us out here?
Oh, yes, because I really want to do this one. So this week in Woke, this is our, what did I call this before we started the show? This is our like key segment, right? So we try to have it this week in Wins and this week in WTF. But this week in Woke is one of our segments we've had since the beginning. This is from our friend Pam Key at Breitbart.com. Now, you don't have to believe Pam Key. There's video, right? There's actual video. So Mark Cuban, Trump tariffs will kill Christmas, right? This is hilarious, right? Billionaire, don't forget that part. Billionaire investor Mark Cuban said Friday on MSNBC's The Beat that if former President Donald Trump is elected and implements tariffs, it will kill Christmas. Cuban said, and I quote, I would ask them what they bought their kids for Christmas last year. And then I would go through the list and show them how many are made in China, because most of them are. And then I would tell them with Trump's tariffs, all of those are probably going to go up 60%. And you're going to have to make choices. If you elect Donald Trump and he implemented these tariffs, is that what you want to do? You want to tell your kids they're not going to have as much of a Christmas? And he added, okay, this is just ridiculous coming from a billionaire. Not only that, but what about that local retailer, the gift shop, the dress store, the sporting goods store? They're going to be out of luck because you're buying less. They're getting less. So you're going to put them out of business. Do you really want to vote for the Trump that killed Christmas? That's just so you know, when you start getting into the details, you can see the light bulb go on when you talk to people, because they didn't connect the two. They didn't connect tariffs to their Christmas and the increasing cost and the impact it will have on their family, which could be far more draconian than anything that's happened before. OMG. OMG. Okay. What have I said for the past year about Mark Cuban?
He's setting up a run for 2028.
He absolutely is, guys. And this is why, because this season of Shark Tank, season 16, whatever, over the last 8 years, but it's his last season of Shark Tank. He is removing himself from other areas, and he's going to run because he saw Trump do it. He's like, billionaire, he did it. I can do it too. And so he's totally setting himself up.
Who else is he incredibly jealous of?
Oh, Elon Musk. He is so jealous of Elon Musk. Yes.
No question. But yes. I guess he didn't consider that that Trump won't be in office this Christmas.
Exactly.
Even if he wins.
He won't be in office yet.
January.
Yes. Okay.
Now, maybe he's talking about in the future.
But but he also forgot that Biden kept all of Trump's China tariffs and added some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes.
Wow. You know, when I read this, I always go to Mark Cuban owns an NBA franchise.
That's
the
right.
Dallas Mavericks. Okay. The NBA is so tight with China, you couldn't
get away from them. Because they make a lot of money.
There is no criticism of China allowed in the NBA. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, Daryl Morey, he was the Houston Rockets NBA general manager. He had to step down after he put out a tweet supporting, at the time, the pro-democracy protest in Hong Kong. He just put up a flag of Hong Kong and says, "We support you." And he was out of a job so fast. And this, you know, this is right before COVID. Yeah. COVID was the greatest thing that stopped that whole, protest over there, because they couldn't obviously gather together. So when I see Cuban, he will never criticize China. And by the way, tariffs, the way that Trump wants to use them, he wants to use them as a bargaining tool.
Right.
And if he threatens 100-200% tariffs on things, so be it. He's going to get people to back down because we're the world's largest economy.
Well, and also I'll add this. Cuban's not wrong how many goods are made in China, but there's this book, I think it's called, it was maybe a decade ago, it's called The Year Without China. And it was a journalist who wrote A Year Without China in her home, where nothing the family owned could come from China, and how much more difficult it was than they ever expected. But guess what? They freaking survived. They survived. They did fine. They had to buy American goods and, you know, goods from Mexico or wherever, but they wouldn't buy anything from China. So let's say it comes down to that, then that's going to make American goods more available, perhaps even, you know, I mean, it'll just be, I think it'll balance out.
Yeah, I mean, here's a quick analogy or example. Go to Spain, go to France, go to Germany. See how many Fords and Chevys you see over there.
Yeah,
that would be zero. Okay, yeah, you know, tariffs are hopefully. I'm not a huge tariff fan, but they can be used as a weapon to get fair trade.
Yes, I think this is rich, pun intended, coming from a billionaire. Yeah. I think this is ridiculous. Yeah. Your kids are not going to go without Christmas.
No.
You know?
No, it will not affect
but
him.
But he is so in bed with second. China, it's unreal.
Yeah, and he's looking for his lane to figure out into politics. And
Yeah. So. All right. We'll see you in 2028, Mark. Okay. you guys, thank you so much for joining us today. We know we've been absent the last couple of weeks in live, and we love your comments in real time. I think we can only see the comments from YouTube and LinkedIn in real time. I'm not sure we can see them from Facebook, X, and Rumble. But again, we encourage you to comment in real time and join us live next Sunday. We will be live actually the next three Sundays, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Rumble, LinkedIn, X, and Facebook. And if you're listening to the podcast, which always drops the next day, please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening right now. Those reviews are so important. Even give us a bad review. We don't care. The more reviews, the more we raise awareness of the show. You can also support our show by joining our locals community, and you'll be able to see where to access that on our website. So go to myfavoriteconservative.show. That's myfavoriteconservative.show to learn more, to contact us, to reach out. If you want to be a guest, let us know.
Yep. Our show next Sunday, we will then be down to 2 days before the election.
Yes. Right? Yes. Oh, and we have something juicy I'm going to share with the audience.
Uh-oh.
My dad, I won't say why, but he is going to be in town on election day, spending election night with us. It should be interesting, folks.
Dad's not a conservative.
I think I'm going to he was a Reagan Republican. I don't know what happened.
It's a long time.
I know, but I think I'm going to have to sit in the middle and have, you know, the love of my life on one side and then my father on the other side of the couch. So
this will be fun viewing.
Be
yes.
So yeah,
we'll
fun.
Give you a preview next week.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. Again, we appreciate your comments and interaction, and we hope you have a great Sunday.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.